To sync this podcast to the episode, pause now and hit play right after the previously on. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Outlander podcast. I'm Matt Roberts, executive producer and writer. And here we are again in my home office under quarantine and lockdown. Let's get started. This is Journey Cake, written by Diana Gabaldon, directed by Jamie Payne. I'm sure you were all excited to hear that Diana was writing another episode this season, as we were. I called her up before the season started and asked her if she thought she would have time to be able to write an episode, given that she is also writing book 9. I wanted to make sure that she would be able to, and obviously you see the final product here, so she did have time. This is one of those scenes where production design really comes in. We talked about this for quite a while about how much of this cabin we see and how much they have to build. I mean, you imagine building something and then burning it down. 10 minutes later, as soon as you're done building it, destroy it to make it look, to make it look like there was a fire, and we did a burn. So, kudos to the art department for finding, first off, we find the location, we have to go in, clear it, build, and then destroy. So that's, quite the undertaking when you know you're doing it just for the block. It's not like we had this cabin here for the whole season and then we burned it. So, this scene was actually, in a difficult to imagine what this young lady would look like. We talked a lot about hair, makeup, prosthetics, when we do prep, and what ultimately happened is when we filmed this, when it was blocked, and blocking is where the actors end up in the scene. So Jamie and Roger end up here, and Claire and Brianna end up somewhere out in the woods, searching for survivors. And we wanted to make sure that this young lady looked, that Jamie and Roger could clearly see she was going to die, and that even if calling Claire over, it wasn't going to help her. So we actually enhanced all the wounds in visual effects. It's one of those processes, when you see the cut and you're watching, you want to make sure that, what the actors are also seeing, you want to make sure that what the audience is seeing is, they're reacting to it. So we took down some of her skin in visual effects. We took down, we made the wounds more extensive throughout, and all that was done in visual effects. And you can see where, in the actual cut, her arm was sticking up, and we actually removed that and put dirt over it. So I think they did a great job there of really enhancing that to make sure that when our characters saw that young woman, that they knew instantly that she was going to pass away. So, and that's what we wanted to make sure of. And here we are with the main titles. Normally, once again, that's what we call the cold open. And then we do the main titles. Sometimes, we'll just start on the main titles and then we come into the episode. I don't believe, because I don't have the script in front of me right at this moment, that we did that we planned on a cold open. I think we did that in post. This was the penultimate episode, but it was also filmed in the last block. So when we were filming the finale, we were also filming episode 11 at the same time. So, you know, on a given day, you would have, say, on Monday you were filming episode 11. Well, very easily on Tuesday you could be filming scenes from episode 12. And we try to schedule out at least every few days, you know, you're filming the same episode so people can get into a rhythm. Sometimes that doesn't work out. As you see this title card, so we talked about doing this title card a couple seasons ago, actually, and we didn't get to, so it worked out perfectly here. Love how we went back to, you know, Edinburgh and had that moment of Claire eating the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I remember when we were filming this, we were talking to some of the crew members, the British film crew, and you know, shelling peanuts at, say, a sporting event isn't a thing. You know, roasting peanuts and you know, eating roasting peanuts and cracking them, and so I kind of took the when we were doing the insert shots of this, you know, took the doubles through it and said, you know, this is how you do it. And I was kind of shocked that you know, shelling peanuts wasn't a worldwide thing, but evidently it's not. So, I think we discussed the sounds of this scene longer than anything else. What do when do we have the buzzing? When do we don't have the buzzing? How what does the opal sound like when it cracks? Like, believe it or not, we get into sometimes, and they're not debates or arguments. They're just what are the what is it? And we go back to earlier episodes and we listen to the sounds. And you know, when they come up, when they go down, you know, because obviously you can't have the buzzing so loud right now where, you know, Claire could hear it, but it walks all over the dialogue because clearly the dialogue is the most important thing in the scene. We wanted to be careful with this scene in the sense that the Browns are coming, and in the sense of, you know, the last time, you know, Jamie saw him, and you know, they certainly weren't friends, but they weren't foe yet. And I think it was important not to hang too big of a cloud over this arrival. You know, but you can see that Jamie's wary, and you know, Sam plays it that way. Showing a little bit of, you know, who's in the group now. It's kind of a mishmash group. This is filmed out on our location set, where we have the bakehouse. It's one of those a rarity in for us is that we can film this practically 360. There's a little dead space behind the house that we can't film, and hopefully we'll rectify that in season 6. But for the most part, certainly in the when the trees are fully leafed, that we can film almost 360, and that creates such a bonus for the production when we can go to almost any spot and you can film back and look back at the house, and you can go from the house and look out at the mountains. So it really it just enhances the production value when you don't have to constantly, you know, erase things with visual effects or worry about, you know, different things in the background. You know, when we were, say, at Fort William, at what is Black Ness Castle for us, you know, across the Forth is you know, there's a base and a military base and some kind of, you know, water plant and all the lights, the light pollution. So you can't put the camera that direction. So when we found this spot, it really, we just jumped all over it and knew that this was going to be a perfect place for us. I find that, you know, in doing the podcasts, sometimes we, you know, you go back and forth with, you know, you guys are looking at the scenes, you've experienced the scenes, and, you know, if there isn't a tidbit of behind the scenes conversation, you know, or talk about what happened during the scene, I don't want to reinterpret the scene for you or, you know, give you my opinion on the scene, because I think everybody watches Outlander in an individual way and they experience it in an individual way. I mean, I could give you my take, and sometimes I do with, you know, what the scene meant to me, or this is what we were thinking when we put this scene in, those kinds of things. But it's, you know, I'm certainly not going, I find that sometimes, you know, the urge, especially sitting here all by myself, is to talk about the scene and what's happening in it, but I fight that urge quite often. So, I mean, you could see that young Ian doesn't like Brown. You could see that Brown's not taken with this guy who's dresses like an American Indian and, you know, or in his time, you know, a savage. And why would you? So, look, there, I did it. Oh, that's a really good shot when Lionel was coming out. You could see the separation of the house and the breezeway. That window that just to the left there, that was the surgery window looking out, the one that Bree looked out. This scene, now here's an example of a scene that was actually in episode 8 when it was originally... you know, created. It was going to be at the end of episode 8, and we realized it just didn't fit in that episode at all. So it after, you know, Ian sees the stone crack, the reaction in the actual shot, in the scene when the stone cracks, he doesn't overreact in it like he might. It's because we filmed that scene prior to writing this scene. When we realized it wasn't going to fit into episode 8, so then we placed it here, and it works out really well. And this it works out well in this episode because it helps tell the story of the stone, and we bring in the journal, and so it really, I think, enhances this episode way more than it did in Ep 8, and episode 8 was running quite long in terms of screen time. I like that every now and then Jamie just you know, can read another language. I mean, Latin, it's got to be tough. I think that Claire would know a little bit of Latin as well, you know, being a physician, so much of, you know, medical terms are rooted in Latin. I don't know if she could read what you know, Ottertooth wrote. Yes, that's a drink. It is, well, it's daylight, so that's enough. It's the Sassenach again. Going with something that smooth, tastes good. This scene is what I feel is a big callback to when young Ian first saw Claire, if you remember way back in season 3. He had a different look on his face. He had a different aura about him, and you can see the change in the character from then until now. If you put those scenes together, if you watch them back to back, you can just see the difference in the character, and I think that John Bell really dug into it this season. He really dug in and he wanted to be a different character after what he has endured with the Mohawks, and you know, that story will certainly be told at some point. Excited to tell that story. Lots of things coming in season 6. Once again, still working really hard. The writers are hard at work getting, writing scripts. We're writing scripts now, and we're moving forward because we want to be ready when we're able to. We want to just, you know, hit the ground running. This is, I think, you know, Gary Steele will probably, he might not admit it, but this lean-to was the bane of his existence when we would keep writing scenes to go back to the lean-to, and from a designer point, he just doesn't love it. It's not something. I'm sorry, I laugh at his reaction every time it comes up in the script. Gary would usually say something like, "Hey, does it have to be in the lean-to? Could it be someplace else?" And you know, I'm always up for a suggestion. So it's like, well, where could it possibly be? Anyway, this conversation happens almost every time we see the lean-to. We actually gave Gary a kind of a fun gift on his, as you know, Gary has moved on from the show, and, you know, we gave him a mug that had the lean-to, a picture of the lean-to on it as a joke, just because he loves it so much. Anyway, we miss you, Gary, and we love you. You're such a huge part of Outlander and bringing it to life, so, and his entire team. This is this revelation from Ulysses, catches, I mean, certainly them off guard, and I was it caught us off guard, you know, when you read it, you know, in the book. It's a great plot twist, and it tells a lot about his character, which I love. This is why we, you know, wanted to include this scene. Good old cabin. This is going to be one of those sets that we just, you know, it's become a Lollybrock, or it feels like home every time you walk up to this set. Even though we have the big house now, it just feels like this original cabin is more Fraser's Ridge than even the big house. Contemplating time travel. Some of the conversations about time travel in the room are fun. We've had these ever since season one, trying to figure out how it all works and what we show and how we show it. It's one of those, they're not, once again, not debates. It's just, you know, you can have an opinion. I remember Diana came into the room back in season one. She came into the room and she was visiting, and we had a conversation about it, and she took us through, you know, the time travel rules for the show, because every work of fiction that has time travel in it sets their own rules. Well, Outlander has set the rules, and we certainly try to adhere to them strictly. I think one of the only things that we've ever said is we'll never actually physically show people traveling through time, like that Star Wars, you know, time warp type of scene. You know, we have our stones, and I think, you know, the audience certainly makes, you know, imagines, you know, you can imagine what it is, and everybody will have their individual imagination of what it's like going through the stones. I think Claire describes it, and we show it in episode one, as a car crash, felt like a car crash to her. Once we figured out, you know, our characters have figured out, you know, you need gems, you need this, and I don't know if you guys remember, but way back we shifted our timelines because of shooting. So when we started shooting episode one, 101, it was in the fall, so it wasn't in the spring as the timeline in the actual book. Oh, good old John Gray. It's always good seeing him. I think one of the tough things we have in these books, you know, after John's physically there, but in the books, you know, there's quite a few letters that he writes. And Jamie and John communicate through letters. And for us, you know, it's always good to have David Barry standing in front of you know, Sam, so they can play these scenes together. And this is, you know, we're always looking for ways of getting, John Gray into the scenes physically. So you saw that in episode eight, he sends things to them, but we had him bring them. And this is a case that we just, you know, I think everybody likes to see, you know, the dynamic between those characters. They have a strong chemistry. I think one of the things that always strikes me is, at the end of the day, how good the sound sounds on Outlander. Given the fact that there is a river, a moving river right behind them, and it is right behind them, how great our sound department is in not only the physical, you know, sound production on set when they're filming, but, you know, our sound mixers back here in post do a phenomenal job of making sure that you can hear everything, because that's not an easy task. When we go on tech recce's, which is essentially, you know, the scouts, when we bring the crew and how, you know, the heads of department and how, you know, how it breaks down is we'll go out and scout very early. Usually it's the location manager and production designer will go and look at 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, 8 different places for something. And they will narrow it down to the ones that they like. They'll go with also our UK producer, Guy Tannehill, and another producer, Michael Wilson, sometimes goes. And they'll look at these to see if they're even, you know, if we can even get to these sites. And then after that, I'll go and I'll look at what they've narrowed down. And if you know, it has to feel right for the show. And that's... I think, you know, where I come in on it and we all make this collective decision that yes, it feels right. Yes, it looks fantastic. Yes, we can build here or we can film here. Yes, we could get the crew in and the actors in safe and, you know, in a safe manner. So all those things take into account. And then, the director comes on, they will do a scout. Sometimes they like where we pick, sometimes they have their own take on it. Unfortunately, when a lot of times when we get to prep, that we've had to make these early decisions because something's being built there and we have to give our department time to actually build it. So then before filming starts, what we do is we have something called a tech recce, and this is all the technical, if you imagine the technical crew. So, you know, the camera department sends somebody, the grips sends somebody, you know, each department will, you know, props and everybody will go and they're looking at and sound and they all look at it from what they'll need to film in this location. So, and normally when we roll up on a roaring river, the sound department is the first one to, you know, the angst, you can just, you know, get, you know, move your gaze to the sound department and their eyes are, you know, you can see the furrowed brows and the sweat coming, even if it's cold. And they're like, how are we going to make this work? And they always do. And that's the thing about it. They always do. So that long story to get to how we have great sound on the show. But I think taking you through the steps of how we actually make the show, I find that a lot of you ask me those questions, you know, on social media. So, you know, I think once again, I think the scenes speak for themselves in a lot of ways. So the physical, how we get things done and how we do things and how we break things down will help you understand, I think, in the long run, sometimes the decisions we make in what you do see on screen. And a lot of questions come up. Why did we do it this way? Or why did we do it that way? Or why we didn't film here? Or why don't we use this person? And a lot of times that's, you know, it comes down to what we're able to, you know, where we're able to shoot, when we're able to shoot, you know, safety is always a concern. Sometimes I remember back in season one, we found just, you know, we walked up to this glorious spot and it had 360 views. And it couldn't have been more wonderful, and we wanted to film there. But when you looked at it from a standpoint of where we would have to put our base and our tech base, and then getting crew up and down the mountain and equipment, we could have done that. But then getting the actors to this spot, it would have meant that at any point, if the act, you know, crew or actor had to leave the spot and go back to base, it would have been a half hour one way. So you get to a point where you go, that's maybe gorgeous and maybe perfect, but we can't film there. I don't know if you noticed, but that's the bedroom for the big house in that scene. This is the bedroom. We've moved the bed upstairs, and Jamie and Claire have what is a pretty nice bedroom. And it was deliberately, you know, we wanted to move it to this point for this particular scene. We wanted to make sure she, the window's open, and we wanted to make sure it had all the elements from the book scene, so we could actually film this particular scene. We you know, believe it or not, we think ahead. So I didn't, you know, when we had the bed in episode 9, you know, the snake bite episode, that was down in the parlor. But as you saw in the episode earlier in the episode, when young Ian walks into the parlor, you know, there's new furniture in there, so they've since moved upstairs. It's a fun scene. This is also a set built in the studio, and upstairs on the house on location, there is no upstairs. That's all facade up there. There's nothing, you know, we can't even physically go upstairs. So this is built on one of the stages. Not that anybody's thinking about that right now. I often wondered, you know, going back in time, that that we didn't show, you know, whether it had been Claire or Brianna or Roger ever reacting to the smells. I think you just kind of, you know, well, you just don't play it. But I can't even imagine when Claire first walked into Edinburgh, which from what I read and was reading about, was one of the dirtier cities in Europe at the time, because of the close quarters and people throwing things out the window. But we never really talk about how, what Wilmington smells like with all the horses and the manure, and what a 20th century person would react to. Here's a fun scene that we originally had this scene placed in episode 3, when Jamie, you know, comes back to the big house after being on the road, and he comes back and we had it there, but it just didn't work in that episode at all. And then we knew that, of course, Diana was writing this episode, so where better to put it. It is funny when you're having meetings about this particular scene, because, you know, we had to talk about, you know, what he's looking at, you know, you see on the schedule, sperm meeting. It's quite funny to, go to a number of, you know, sperm meetings when you read the book, you know, because not every single person on the crew has read every single book. So, you know, you get some looks on your face when you walk into the meeting room and people are like, what are we going to be talking about? Anyway, this is, it's one of those, you know, we want to have to make sure the microscope and what, you know, we're looking at slides and what they're going to be looking at, or what Jamie's going to be looking at. So, every now and then Outlander has some unusual meetings. We've had quite a few unusual meetings over the course of five seasons. Nice scene between Jamie and Brianna. You guys can see the portrait. We is a portrait of the actor that played William in the season four. Harris, stop drinking. I won't be able to write later today. Although someone said, you know, write drunk, edit sober. So maybe I'm maybe this one might work out. There's that. So if you hadn't noticed before, one of the things we talked about once when we first got ad, so I talked to the directors about, you know, trying to work the cat into as many scenes as you can in the house to when you can, when it fits, when it works. And I think they did a nice job doing that. We've had, you know, five, six scenes with the cat in the background. And miraculously, Jamie's arm covers exactly where the cat would have been had it been there. But that was some deft filming, skilled camera work to not see the cat. So my, is it there or is it not there is the question. There's the cat. I'm sorry, I was seeing if we could ever see him. Going through, you know, editing when you watch these, I think, you know, we get the, you know, you originally get the cut. There's an editor's cut, then there's the director's cut, and then, you know, we do producer's cut, and, you know, sometimes you catch things, you know, someone will watch this and go, hey, is that the cat behind Jamie's arm, or is it, you know, and it's obviously we don't want something jumping out, like one show had a coffee cup on, and, you know, so we go through these cuts quite a bit to make sure that there's nothing in the background that shouldn't be in the background, or in that case, you know, right smack on the table. And I think, knock wood, we haven't had that. We did have a water bottle once, but we caught it, and we cut around it. It was in a scene. I think these, you know, I don't like to use the words, you know, I use the word smaller scenes because it feels, you know, like they are, you know, you attach the big scenes, you know, with explosions, or, you know, horses riding fast, or wagons going, you know, tipping over, or people sword fighting, you know, those are the big moments. But really, in a way, these are the big moments, certainly for our show. And we should probably flip that and call the small moments, the sword fights and the, you know, the bonnet attack, or because the bigger moments in Outlander tend to be like this scene. It's a massive moment for our characters, both these characters, played beautifully by Caitlin and Sophie here. When I first saw this scene, you know, it was gut wrenching. It was tough to watch, and I think that's what one of the things we like to get to visually on our show, when people just feel, sometimes it's uncomfortable, sometimes you feel uncomfortable when you watch drama, and it's not you know, good or bad, it just is a thing that you know, it's life, and it's life on the ridge, it's life in Outlander. Last episode, when Claire and Brianna were walking on the beach, you start off, you know, have this still shot of them, and you know, as our promotional pictures, there was a still shot of them walking on the beach, and it looks so you know, peaceful and enjoyable. You know, it's Outlander, and you know what you're signing up for is, well, it's probably not going to be that in the end. And I think that's what, you know, our fans come to expect, that if you can balance the shows, and I think we tried to do that, you know, was one of the our mantras going into season 5, was balance the bigger moments, in the sense of you know, the action scenes, with these smaller moments. And you know what, maybe we will in season 6, we'll just rename them the bigger moments, the goodbyes, the intimate moment with Jamie and Brianna, you know, talking about Willie, you know, to balance the drama with those, really, I think, helps out the whole quality of the show, and it elevates it to you know, what you would say is, you know, that drama that makes you care for the characters so much, that when they go through something, you go through it with them. And ultimately, that's what you want to get to in a television show, is you want to care so much for the characters that you suffer along with them. And then you experience their joys, their happinesses as well. This is the front of the house. I don't know if you remember, but right out those doors, and that's where Jamie and his skilled craftsmen built the altar for the wedding and all the pews, and So you can see how it's grown over the course of the 7 months we were filming there. Oh, and Lionel. Such a kind man. We added a little insert here in this scene later for the medical box. We realized that where the name was placed, that no one could see it, you know, just by looking at it. It's in the drawer. So that bottom drawer, there's Dr. Rawlings' nameplate. So when he looks at it in the scene, when Ned the actor looks at it in the scene, we had to go back and film an insert of what he was looking at. And that, you know, I think we've talked about this in other podcasts. We do that quite a bit throughout the seasons, because of the tight schedule of filming, sometimes you can't, you know, get a camera over there to and light it and make sure you get it during the actual filming day, because it's more important that you're getting the performances. And we schedule quite extensively second unit days to make sure we get all these pickups. And this episode alone, we picked up, we picked up the Lionel looking into the medical box, the shelling of the peanuts. There were different, that's what we call them. It's either a pickup or an insert. And an insert would be when it's just a POV, and that's what you'll see in this shot. And a pickup is normally when you have someone's hands or feet or their back or something like that, and we'll call that a pickup. And finally, we come to it. Dr. Rawlings. Dun, dun, dun. So that actually tells you that that's the actor, that Lionel can read. One of the conversations about, all of the scenes and characters is who can read and who can't read. It feels like, today you almost take it for granted that everybody could read. And back in that time, not everybody could. So, and certainly not to the level of Jamie or Claire. This is a conversation about how would they get there, and how would they get the horses back? So this is, where this scene comes from. And like I say, I don't play favorites very often. I really like this scene. It's just so heartwarming. I can like things. They don't have to be, I think, when you say favorite, you pit things against something else. This is my favorite episode, or this is my favorite scene, or this is my favorite, anything, is then it somehow, for me personally, it discounts or diminishes something else. And I don't think that's the case. I think, we have things we like, and certainly more than others, but this scene's great. But the scene with Marceline Fergus and them saying goodbye, I think that was, heart-wrenching. I think the Lizzie scene was gut-wrenching, and so there's so many, great scenes, certainly in this episode, but in all the episodes had some fantastic scenes. I think what's nice about this particular episode is it shows, when you're forced to say goodbye to people, it shows all the bonds that have been created, over the course of the seasons and between the characters. We do have a cast that and crew that really get along well. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, I can blow smoke here and try to spin, but it's not. It's this. Everybody does get along. We have created a lovely family on the show, and people just get along. And we could, we have our differences about things, but that's what creative people do. You have differences. You say, I see it this way, and someone else sees it another way, and then you have conversations about it. But in the end, just everybody just gets along so well. And I think this is, in this episode, it kind of shows that not only do the actors have bonds, but they bring it into their performances, because there's so much chemistry with all the characters, between all the characters. So you know, David and Sophie are, you know, just they have a chemistry. We saw that in season 4, and it just comes out in their performances. I think I want to say episode 11, season 4, you know, when they had all their scenes together. But you know, episode 6 in back in season 4, when you know, John Gray and Claire had those scenes together. You know, you can see that the chemistry is there, and I think that's really matters. I think Stain did a fantastic, our director of photography did a fantastic job on the lighting on this episode. It's just it's so warm, and you feel, you know, you feel the warmth of the family just through the composition as well, and you know, Jamie Payne, the director, in blocking these shots as well. This is one of the things we talked about for this episode of, you know, when you know you have to say goodbye to someone and you kind of avoid it. And I think Claire and Brie had been avoiding this moment for the whole episode until they get this moment. And you almost get this unspoken, you know, that connection that it'll, even though it's goodbye, it'll never be goodbye. And they will always have a part of them, will be together. Oh, Journey Cakes. We finally get to it. You finally understand the title. This says a this is a fun scene. The knife and fork. I like how young Ian just kind of digs in. I think the people that have actually eaten a peanut butter and jelly sandwich are getting a kick out of a kick out of the people who haven't. I mean, character-wise, oddly enough, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are not a huge thing in the UK, from what I understand. Maybe they will be now after this episode. Always seems to be whiskey on hand, which I like. I did not say that like a bad thing. I was just noticing, you know, Jamie's quite the distiller. Some of these shots, I think we discussed this before, called stock shots. You know, and some aren't. And we blend the two together, and we like to make sure that they meld together, and we don't want you to know which ones are which, because we're pretending that Scotland is North Carolina. And from what I hear from the people in North Carolina, is that we're doing a pretty good job. Obviously, it's not exact, and there are certain things that, you know, Scotland has that North Carolina doesn't, you know, and vice versa. But I don't know if you the rhododendrons back there. Over the first few seasons, we had a really tough time because we couldn't show any of them, and because in the time in Scotland they didn't exist. And then when we moved to America, it was for the Greens department. They were like, "Yes, we can finally show these things because they are indeed in North America." So that kind of saved us. See, what you would think are the little things, and I know there are things that we just you can't, you know, we're filming a period drama. And you just can't fix them, you know. You can't, you know, correct everything. You know, that a certain tree may never grow in North America, or a bird native only to Scotland lands in a tree behind, you know, Jamie and Claire, and it's you know, we don't notice it, and it's just there because it's and you know, someone sees it. Well, you know, those are the things that hopefully don't break the dream for you and don't ruin it. But it does sometimes happen, given the fact that we're filming Scotland for North Carolina. Oh, the buzzing. I had the buzzing conversation. It never goes away. I think we did a little visual effects here with the rope in the original scene. I think Ian was holding on to that rope, and then we took it away. And here we are back to time travel. And the discussions of, you know, I think every director tries to figure out, how do I show this? How do I show them going, you know, going through the stones? And, you know, we've seen it, what, 5, 6, 7 times now. And I think this moment is so fantastic with how young Ian touches him, and we hear his hands hit that stone, and you can feel the coldness of it, and you can see his heartbreak, because he wants to go. He wants to travel back in time and figure out what, you know, if he could fix what happened to him. And that's what's so, I think Jamie Payne in blocking that and did a great job in, you know, just that cold touching of the stone. We toned that, we talked about that. There's probably a lot of speculation on what happened to Roger and Bree, and I'm going to tell you here and now, I'm not going to tell you what happens to them. I don't know how many explosions I saw in one of the cuts we put in as a joke. You know, one of the bigger tests from one of the atomic tests from Los Alamos or in New Mexico, and as a joke, and to see if anybody would notice it, and obviously they did. So, but what that was a visual effects, and you know, we go through stages. So is this, you know, we'll show an explosion. You know, John Neal, who does the visual effects, will send me an explosion, and he'll say, you know, here's the starting point, and I'll say, could it be smaller? Can it have more debris? Can it have smoke? Can it have, you know, and then we just kind of work through, you know, what that would look like. This scene was extensively rehearsed and blocked to what it would be like because, of, you know, it was. And I, you know, for me, that's one of the most devastating moments that I've seen on camera, when Marcelli hits that brick floor. It's just horrifying. think when we were discussing, you know, the filming of this particular scene that's coming up, we filmed it earlier than this block. So when we went up to this location with the cross, we filmed all this at the same time. So this was filmed much earlier. And yes, that is Sam running up there. So we knew it was going to be placed in this episode much later. You kind of take the actors through what's just happened. Once again, I think our visual effects this season are just outstanding. You know, the way that looks. Anyway, there's episode 511. It's gone fast, I think. Certainly not the writing and the filming and the production and everything and the post, but it just feels like and then we just started airing it, but here we are. The finale is coming up. It's an exciting episode. I think a lot happens. I think you'll hopefully you've enjoyed where we are now, and you'll enjoy the finale. Anyway, be safe, everyone, and I will talk to you guys next week.